You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 69, the ultimate FU finale. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including Destination Star Trek London, Haynes Publishing's Klingon Bird of Prey Owner's Manual, a possible Paramount theme park in England, the 2013 Star Trek wall calendars, and StarTrek.com's poll of the best series opening credits. Then in the feature, we're joined by Charlene Schmidt, Drew Stewart, and Jenny Zell to discuss the final episode of the original series, Turnabout Intruder. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I am doing actually really wonderfully. I had one of those moments of geekness today as Felix Bumgarner did his drop from space. And it was really exciting to watch it. And the fact that I was watching it on my pad from bed made it all the more exciting.
I just wonder what someone from, say, 10 years ago even would think if they heard that sentence. I was watching it on my pad from my bed as someone dropped from space. Now, is this, did he drop? Is it the same way that you know, Sulu dropped from space and Kirk dropped from space in the last JJ movie and landed on that platform?
Actually, extremely similarly. Well, rather than being dropped out of a shuttlecraft in orbit, he rose in a balloon. Well, he was in a little pod that looked like what the astronauts used to land in, like from Gemini. So rose up in a balloon to about 130,000 feet and then just let go. So he did the longest, you know, free fall in human history, the highest jump in human history. And he did the whole thing and landed just, you know, strolling along. Perfect landing. You know, the Russian judge gives him a 9.5. It was amazing. And yes, it was exactly like Kirk and Sulu. I kept waiting, you know, 800 meters, 600 meters, or whatever. My Scottish accent's becoming a Russian accent. But all I could think of was that scene from Star Trek.
And after he landed, did he pull a sword out and start trying to fight someone?
He absolutely did. It was quite impressive. I didn't realize Romulans were already on the ground in New Mexico, but apparently.
Well, you know, we all know about that crash, so.
As I said on Twitter.
Broke it out of the hangar.
As I said on Twitter, I don't know why he's even bothering when he's not trying to save Vulcan from a mad time-traveling Romulan. Like, what's even the point?
It's just a show off, that's all.
Well, how are things on the Breen homeworld?
Well, you know, it hasn't really been the Breen homeworld. It's been more like Ryza around here recently. It's pretty hot. Maybe I've seen a few Tholians stroll by. I'm not sure. I'm definitely waiting for autumn to actually arrive, and I don't know when that's going to happen. But
Now, you say it's like Ryza. Have you been accosted in a bar basement by two shape-shifting henchmen?
I have. You know, there are these two Ferengi that keep showing up at random times and harassing me and other people that I know. And, you know, they claim they're from the future. I don't know. I don't believe them. I don't know.
Well, when you're messing with people from the future, just make sure you don't diddle Crewman Daniels.
Right, because we don't want anyone diddling the crew.
Really, no, please don't.
All right, well, why don't we jump in here, Greg? By the time you hear this, you'll be about 2 days, I believe, away from the start of Destination Star Trek London. And we've talked about it many times. Just about everyone associated with Star Trek is going to be there. I saw yesterday that they've now added Anthony Montgomery and maybe a couple other people, like last-minute people. So actually, Seska's going to be back. Martha Hackett's going to be there,
nice.
I think, was a late addition. So
Brian will be very excited.
Right. And our own Colin Higgins is going to be there, along with Tom Baddeley and Colin is, I believe we've mentioned before, an official blogger for the event, and also has a table, I believe, in two areas, in the fan zone as well as maybe the expo area. Anyway, he has a couple of spots. So everyone stop by. It'll be a Trek FM presence, Trek News and Views, Decade, with Colin and Tom there. Stop by, say hello, get your picture taken with Colin. As we said last week, he'll put you on his shoulders. It's going to be a collectible. Don't miss out on that opportunity. And also, we haven't revealed this, Greg, but big news is that Colin's little brother is going to be an official blogger over at the Destination Star Trek Stratford-upon-Avon.
That's going to be the show that you really want to be at. I mean, sure, all of the main captains are going to be in London. But, I mean, how can you skip, you know, Captain Bozeman, Captain Garrett, Captain Harriman? You know, those are the people I really want to see.
Definitely. I cannot wait to meet Frasier. I mean, yeah. Look, he may have been a captain. He may have been captain of the Bozeman. He'll always be Frasier to me. And he's going to be there at Stratford-upon-Avon. So make sure that you stop by, say hello to Colin's little brother. He's going to have a fold-up table, so be careful, don't bump it, but he'll be there.
I mean, stop by for at least a half an hour. I mean, there's not much to see, but if you're in the country for Star Trek London anyway, swing by, you know, shake hands with all the captains, and you'll be out of there, you know, 10, 20 minutes tops.
All right, and after that, you can head over to the big event over in London. And we have a new story related to this, Greg, today.
Yes. So what we have is the new issue of the Star Trek, the magazine, which is actually a really good publication that it's morphed into. It's not monthly, I understand, at this point, right?
I think at this point they're down to quarterly, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, but this one's all about Star Trek Destination London. So they've got a commemorative cover with all the captains. Only James T. Kirk gets to have two eyes, but they're all there.
That's true.
And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what's inside of this one.
Yeah, this is a cover that I guess everyone will be able to get this cover once it hits the newsstands, as I understand it. And that would be October 30th in the U.S. and November 8th in the U.K. But if you're going to be at the convention in London at the end of this coming week, you'll be able to actually purchase this at the show. And I did go yesterday, Greg, through the iPad app to check for the digital edition because it normally comes out before the print edition and it's not available yet. So it seems that they are holding back the digital this time to truly make this an exclusive item for
convention. Yeah, that's really cool that they're actually doing that, making it a real exclusive and not just leaking it early for the online folks. I understand inside you can get articles about Kate Mulgrew, Alice Krieg, and as well as everyone's favorite, Jeff Combs, because you can't have a Star Trek the magazine without a fight with an Andorian.
Right. I like that as you flip through the articles and you get to the middle, there's that pull-out poster of an Andorian fight scene.
Yes. Very cool. Yeah. Did you see, also, you know, they've announced, finally, Star Trek Las Vegas 2013, and there's a little picture showing Jeffrey Combs, and it says, you know, that he's Weyoun and Brunt. But the picture is of neither Weyoun nor Brunt. And why would you mention that he was Brunt? I mean, sure, everyone loves Brunt. That's everyone's favorite Ferengi. But he's Shran. Come on, guys. He's Shran.
Well, this reminds me, Greg. We had an interesting thing on Twitter this week. So you tweeted the picture and you said, hey, Creation Entertainment, is this a picture of Weyoun or Brunt? I can't remember. And you had the picture of Shran.
Yeah.
And of course, I and some of our other followers, like Chris Smith, you know, who has quite a sense of humor, we started tweeting, no, that's the fourth Zeal. And that's the... It's the third Moogie. Yeah, we went on and on. And then we got a message from someone that says, neither one, it's Shran from Enterprise. Hashtag shame on you.
It was the hashtag shame on you that threw me over the edge with that one.
I know. It's like, do you really think that we don't know that that's Shran? It's a joke, people. It's a joke. Jeffrey Combs is everywhere.
He is everywhere. He keeps showing up. He actually, you know, there's a Ferengi episode of Enterprise, and there he is again, playing a different Ferengi. I'd actually forgot about that.
Oh, gosh. He's always on standby, you know, whenever they need a character to be filled in, he's there.
That's quite true. Although there was one time when they needed a Klingon for like one scene and the actor didn't show up, or that he was sick or something like that. And they actually had the guy who plays Admiral Forrest just step in. They're like, you fit this Klingon makeup, right? So there's one scene where Admiral Forrest is a Klingon. So look for that.
I'll have to watch that. Well, speaking of Klingons, Greg, our next story is about a Klingon bird of prey owner's manual, basically. So if you have a bird of prey and maybe you bought it secondhand and the owner no longer had the manual, well, thankfully, Haynes Publishing is coming through for us all and is releasing the official owner's workshop manual to the Klingon bird of prey.
And I understand this is a co-production with the Klingon Corps of Engineers.
It is. And you know what that means, right?
I do know what that means.
So that means when you open it up, one of the juicy tidbits of information that you will receive is the diagram with the exact mechanism that allows the proper sequence of explosions to take place when a bird of prey is destroyed.
Excellent. I need to know, because I need to be running drills. We need to do daily, you know, it's sort of like a fire drill, but it's a bird of prey explosion drill. I need everyone to be in their places. You know, it's sort of like set condition one throughout the ship. You need to be there. I need to be here. Turn the key at exactly the right moment. You know, detonate the mess hall. Yeah, and it's important, because if you don't do it right, that Russian judge is just not going to be looking on you kindly. He's going to give you like a 6.5 at best.
At best. You know who would be really great as the captain of that bird of prey?
Who's that?
It would be acting Captain Tuvok, because he could put it up there on the screen. Okay, step one, you go to your station. Okay, step two, I say the safe word. Step three, you turn the key. You know, he's really good at outlining those steps for everyone.
You think Tuvok's in his ready room with a bunch of candles and meditating. He's really at work, you know, on his netbook, making up a PowerPoint presentation for everybody.
Exactly.
He really
likes the low lighting.
Yes, he likes his little swoop animations. Like, shoo, shoo, shoo. Yes, and then Clippy pops up. Looks like you're trying to blow up a bird of prey. Would you like some help?
I have noticed that he uses the same transition on every slide in his PowerPoints.
He really needs to transition to Keynote. I mean, there's just a lot more you can do. It's got that boom sort of animation. There's the one with all the sparkles. I think that's really going to bring some much-needed life to Tuvok's presentations.
It really is. All right. Well, this manual, if you're interested in getting this, it comes out in November. It's from Haynes Publishing. And you may remember in 2010, so it's been 2 years ago now, they did a similar manual for the USS Enterprise. It has CGI renders of the ships as cutaways. It has many other diagrams other than the one about how to blow up a bird of prey in the proper sequence. It even talks about things like the adjustable wings and the cloaking device.
Right.
But one really interesting marketing thing that they're doing with this, Greg, I don't know if you've heard about this, but 5 copies of this owner's manual are going to contain special sour Klingon food packs. And if you're one of the lucky buyers who finds the Klingon food packs, you actually get to go and tour an actual bird of prey.
Nice. This sounds an awful lot like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
It does, doesn't it?
So is there a Klingon Mr. Wonka that tours you around?
Well, you know, you've never read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory until you've read it in its original Klingon.
This is quite true. How could I forget?
The best part of it all is that one of those 5 people at the end will be chosen to become the new captain of that bird of prey.
who then is going to have to do the detonation sequence in exactly the right order.
Exactly. All right. If you want to get in on this, if you want to try to be the lucky captain of a bird of prey, you can pre-order this book at Amazon and Barnes & Noble right now, and it's going to be out in November.
I'm looking forward to future operations manuals that they'll be coming out with. For instance, the owner's manual to Borg Porthos.
Shows you exactly how to change those tail attachments.
Yes, precisely.
How to properly drill a wall.
All right, so also coming up, exciting news. We've all heard about the Star Trek theme park that's in coming out in Jordan. That's going to be, you know, they're going to tap into the core of the Earth. So it's all going to be self-sustaining electricity. And it's actually going to help attract the Vulcans to Earth by beaming into space, subspace transmissions. But okay, so that's all amazing Middle Eastern stuff. But we're getting our own, well, you know, us in the Western world are getting our own Paramount theme park, I understand, near London in a few years.
Right. And Greg, let me just say that with this coming to London, which is in the UK, and you said we're getting our own, I think you've been watching just a little too much Doctor Who. Allons-y!
It's possible. Well, you know how, you know, when you're talking about your sports ball team, and instead of saying they, you say we, that's sort of the way I've started to feel about England. You know, it's not just them, it's us. It's us against the Slovene.
All right. Well, yeah, this story comes from Geek Tyrant, and they're talking about the possibility of a Paramount-based theme park in England that would open, if everything goes through, they say, it would be operational in 2018, which means it would be coinciding with the premiere of the third J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie, if my math is correct.
That's exactly right, which I understand is going to be called Star Trek Into London.
Right. All the British actors in Star Trek Into Darkness is just like a prelude. It's a harbinger. It's complete foreshadowing for the third movie, Star Trek Into London.
Yes, what everyone doesn't realize is that they're slowly replacing all of the actors in Star Trek with British actors. And by the next one, it's pretty much going to be David Tennant as Kirk. We're going to have Martin Freeman playing Spock. Yeah.
Martin Freeman is going to make a kick-ass Spock.
Well, not nearly as great as Judi Dench as Uhura.
I thought they were getting Mos Def to play Uhura.
He could do a pretty good job. You know, I did like him in the Hitchhiker movie.
All right. Well, this is, I don't know. This story is interesting to me. It's speculative right now, and they say that, and what they do say is that there is an 872-acre plot of land near London that is having something built on it, something right. large built on it right now. They don't know if it's actually this theme park.
Right. It sounds like there's basically some people who want to build a theme park, and they've got some land, and it sounds like their idea is, if they can get Paramount on board, they can have a lot of really cool properties. You know, they can have Transformers, they can have Star Trek, Mission Impossible. There's lots of hot properties that Paramount has that they could build theme rides with. But Paramount's kind of trying to get out of the theme park business. You know, I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina, and right nearby, there used to be Paramount's Carowinds, which was a Paramount theme park, you know, with a, well, there was a Top Gun ride. There was also Wayne's World. A bunch of weird Paramount themed stuff, but they actually pulled out. They basically sold their stake, and now it's just known as Carowinds. And I understand they've done that with all of their theme parks in the States. So I don't know how excited or interested they're actually going to be in getting into the theme park business, as exciting as this does sound.
I don't know. It would be interesting to me, and maybe some of our British listeners can tell us. I wonder what the potential pool of visitors would be of having a theme park like this in London, because I don't know. I mean, we have Disneyland here in Tokyo, and I'm surprised how many people I mention Disneyland to and they say, oh, you have a Disneyland in Tokyo?
Yeah.
And I thought everyone knew that there was a Disneyland in Tokyo, but apparently not. And
yeah, I would think so. I mean, there's Disneyland in Tokyo. There's Euro Disney, which I understand is tiny and horrible, but it still gets a lot of visitors every year. So I don't know. It's possible that if there was a big, impressive theme park in London, you know, England's not that big. Great Britain is not that large. It'd be pretty easy for people to get there. So it's not crazy. I don't know. When they say, you know, there's an 872-acre plot of land outside of London, how far outside of London? Are we talking, you know, like right there in the city, or is it sort of out in the countryside? But I could see this being something that works, you know, be sort of a destination for people.
Yeah, it could be. It could be interesting. You know what they could do is to help people from the European continent get over to Great Britain. Instead of them using, you know, like the channel or something, they could actually build a special tunnel that is just like the tube in the J.J. Abrams engineering. They could fill it with water. You could climb in and it could just shoot you right across the channel.
You just have to hold right your breath the whole time, like Simon Peck.
Yeah, right. That's right. And you pop out right in the middle of the Star Trek area of the theme park.
Sopping wet.
Sopping wet.
This theme park's exciting.
That's right. And you go up to the window, and instead of asking for a ticket, you say, could I get a towel?
Yes, exactly. That'd be lovely. Well, what sort of rides would you want, aside from the Scotty water tube? What sort of rides would you want to see in a Paramount theme park?
I don't know. The Scotty water tube might be all the excitement I could handle, but what else? I don't know. I mean,
well, I'm definitely looking forward to a space jump exhibit where you sort of climb up a tower and just jump off and onto a platform. You have to fight some Romulans. That definitely would be quite exciting.
That would be pretty cool. And I think for those who, you know, get motion sickness from rides, it would be like at Disneyland, they have the area where you can go to Mickey's house or Minnie's house and you can get your photo taken. I'd like to see an area where I can, you know, go to Uhura's quarters and get my hug.
Very nice. Well, you know, Star Trek's not the only thing they have. You know, they've got all these other properties. I understand that for the ultimate in, you know, thrills and chills, there's a Transformers area where you get to try to spend 10 minutes in the presence of Shia LaBeouf. I actually like Shia LaBeouf, so I take that back. The excitement of spending 10 minutes with Shia LaBeouf, who really has nothing else to do.
He's just hanging out there until the next Indiana Jones movie comes
around. Exactly. Which, honestly, Shia, it's not going to happen at this point. You missed the chance. Sorry.
Right. If they do make another one, it's going to be Harrison Ford again, right?
It's going to be Harrison Ford and Harrison Ford and a lot of like de-aging makeup with computers.
Maybe Shia can get in like Indiana Jones 9, where he pushes the stuffed Harrison Ford around the set long after Harrison is not with us anymore.
There we go. All right. So what else do we have on the news docket, Chris?
Well, we're coming up on the end of the year. It's October. It's almost mid-October. And that means that it's time to start thinking about your 2013 wall calendars, because we've got to know what's going on next year.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, it's 2013, or it's going to be 2013. And really, I can't think of a better way to know what day it is than to have a piece of paper pinned to your wall at home.
Well, I have to admit that I have both of the Star Trek calendars that were printed for 2012 on my walls. But I mainly put them up there because I want to see the pretty pictures.
Exactly. Yes, you have the Ships of the Line from 2012?
I do. It's right there behind my head. Yep.
Oh, I see a very nice explosion. Explosions are good.
It is. It's the Enterprise E destroying the Sona.
I see. If you look very, very closely, I understand you can see the Trill Ensign smirking.
You can, yeah. Actually, I have that part circled.
But yeah, we've been seeing previews, actually, from Doug Drexler's blog, The Drex Files. We've been seeing previews of the 2013 Ships of the Line calendar that includes the Enterprise. What is that? Is it the Enterprise J that we see in Enterprise? But they've got it fully fleshed out.
That's the Enterprise J. Yeah.
It's a weird looking ship. I don't know if I'm completely on board, but you know, it's J. It's a few centuries in the future. Who am I to say what starship design is at that point?
It's like really spindly, and then the big ass saucer section, right?
It's weird. It's like this weird like V-shaped saucer section, right. And then there's like a tail. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. The nacelles come off of the saucer. It's not really a saucer. It's like this weird, it's actually kind of shaped. It's the delta shape. It's a weird starship design. I hope we'll have that as the enhanced art, so you can just be looking at your iPad right now and see what it looks like. It's the weirdest starship you've ever seen. And it was sort of only in like schematic view during Enterprise. But this, they've actually built a full model of it and shown it here on screen, so you can really see what it looks like. It's a crazy looking ship with this huge section on the other whatever you call it, the regular section on the front. So you'll be able to see that in like really nice detail. And for some reason, it's on this image, it's like right in front of an Enterprise D. So I don't know if they traveled in time or where this image comes from.
Well, no, that's Admiral Riker's ship. I mean, he said he planned to live forever, and he meant it. He's still flying around.
He just kept building Enterprise Ds. He really wanted to be in that captain's chair. Like, okay, he got the Titan. That was fine. He did the Titan thing for like 10 years. But when he was done, he was like, guys, seriously, build me another D.
Exactly. That's his ship. He's probably got like 6 nacelles on it. We can only see 2 of them in this picture, but...
Oh, yeah.
Just keeps adding nacelles.
Check out the warp field on this thing, bitch.
Okay, well, so we have a bunch of calendars coming out. This main story was about the UK company Danilo's 2013 calendars. They have a TOS calendar, and they have what they just call Star Trek ships. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Ships of the Line calendar and a TOS calendar coming out from CBS in the US. And I haven't seen the inside of these to know if they're actually different or if they just have different covers and different publishers based on region.
Yeah.
The pricing is different. We'll have to find out about that. The CBS calendars are $14.99 retail in the States, and the Danilo calendars are almost £8. So
yeah, I definitely need to pick one of these up. I'm not sure which one. I'll probably need one for home and then one for my cubicle at work. I'm looking at, you've embedded a picture here of the official JJ film calendar that I guess is coming from Paramount. It's got an image of, you know, the Enterprise warping into the, you know, the destroyed fleet in orbit of Vulcan. And it's just like, wow, is basically the sound I made when I saw that. So I'll probably be picking this one up, honestly.
That's a pretty nice image. Now, you know, I'm not wild about the JJ Enterprise, but this particular view of it is quite beautiful. Definitely.
And I'm going to make no comment there about how you like your Enterprise.
All right. Also coming out from ML Publishing is the TNG 25th Anniversary Calendar, which retails for $16.99 and has Picard on the cover. I'm pretty sure that we'll have everyone else inside. But this reminds me, actually, Greg, this TNG one reminds me. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about what calendar I would want that they're not releasing, because they used to do calendars for all the series. They had so many different calendars. In recent years, they've been doing basically two. One of the ones I'm looking forward to that I hear is going to be coming from a smaller publisher is the Where's Argyle calendar.
How does that one work? Is it just images of like it's schematics of the Enterprise, and you have to look with a magnifying glass to figure out exactly which Jeffrey's tube he's in?
That's the middle. When you open it up, that's the big spread, right? And it does come with a little magnifying glass, so you can do that. it's more like a loop. It's like just a flat loop.
Right.
But, no, what it is that each month has a scene from engineering. Usually it's engineering. And you have to find Argyle loitering in the background while the rest of the crew does productive things in the foreground.
There we go. Like, they're trying to save the ship, and Argyle's just back there chugging away at some gin.
Yeah, he's just he's leaning on the warp core back there. Yeah,
they call a staff meeting, and you know everybody's seated around the table, and yeah, he's just sort of sitting in the doorway, keeping the door from closing, just listening to what's going on. Whatever. Yeah, they'll ask me for my help if I need it.
Sometimes he's leaning in the corner by the plant. He thinks no one can see him over there.
Right.
Well, that's one of the two special ones. The other special calendar that's coming out is called Famous Scant Moments. And this one has, each month has a famous scene from The Next Generation. Only it has been remastered so that everyone in the scene is wearing a scant.
Nice. I heard this one, they were thinking of calling it Scants in History. Because you know that they wore scants during the first season of TNG, but you didn't realize that scants were popular in all the other periods of Star Trek as well. Not only did they have the scant version of the First Contact uniform, there was a scant Wrath of Khan uniform. They even had scants all the way back in the days of the NX-01. But if you look very, very closely, I mean seriously, look very closely, you can actually see them in the background.
That's right. But most of the crew members that we saw in the motion picture, for example, especially like Decker, he tried on the scant. He declined. His exact words, and you can hear this on some of the tapes, you know, from the shooting, was he said, "I'm sorry, guys, but not enough junk. And so the scant's not going to work for me. I really need the baby blue pants and the giant belt buckle to, you know, to cinch it." To kind of accentuate the...
This was a question I had after watching the... You know, there's the episode of Enterprise where Trip has to save the ship from ravaging Ferengi in his underwear. And I was wondering, you know, when does too much junk become just the right amount of junk?
And what did I tell you?
I believe you told me that we need to ask Charlene and Kate Walsh about that. I think you may be right.
I was pretty sure they could give us an answer. It's all I'm saying. You know, it's... Yeah. All right. Speaking of Trip's underwear, Greg, I don't know if you noticed that I have a new visor today. I have my new glasses and...
I do.
If you notice the inside of the glass, the outside, they're black. The inside are officially licensed Starfleet underwear blue.
That's perfect. I do hope you chose them for that exact reason.
I did. In fact, I asked when I picked them out, I asked now, is this blue? Is it officially licensed?
Right. You wouldn't want somebody just doing a knockoff Starfleet uniform underwear blue. But no, they did officially license it from CBS.
Right. You have to be careful, you know, because sometimes if you get those made in China, you know, that blue, it kind of becomes a teal.
Yeah.
And You don't want to see the crew running around in teal underwear, and you don't want to be wearing fake Starfleet underwear, blue/teal on your face. So
right, and this is really why they ended up not doing too many episodes of, you know, DS9 and Voyager where the crew is in their underwear, because it's this ugly, ugly shade of teal that really nobody wants to see on screen.
I don't know how that happened, but somehow it just morphed there. So
yeah.
Bad trends at the Starfleet Academy School of Fashion.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So anyway, these are the calendars coming out. Watch for them. I checked around. You can already order them from places like Amazon online. Probably, if you're in America, I know in the shopping malls, they always stick those giant calendar racks in the middle of the mall. You'll probably find them there as well.
It's been a long road getting from there to here. It's been a long time, but my time is finally near. And I will see my dream come alive at last. I will touch the sky, and they're not gonna hold me down no more. No, they're not gonna change my mind.
Greg, we have another thing to talk about here. Occasionally on the Ready Room, we like to talk about the polls that StarTrek.com runs. And this past week, they ran a poll that asked the question, which series had the best opening title sequence? And I'm a little bit surprised by the results. So, what do you think about this?
It's been a long time getting from... Oh, wait. You wanted me to start singing, right? That was my cue to start singing?
It was.
The result of this poll, I don't know. Okay, so I understand. Enterprise may be one of my favorite title sequences. It probably is actually my favorite title sequence. I sing along, I play along, I can actually play it. I was playing it for you before the podcast. I love the images of, you know, space and history. They've got Neil Armstrong, they've got Amelia Earhart. They show the HMS Enterprise. They show the International Space Station. They show a moon base, for God's sake. How can you not love this title sequence? But who won the poll, Chris?
Okay, well, the series that finished first, I won't argue too much with this one. That's Voyager. I think that what I remember is when Voyager first premiered, I remember thinking that, wow, they really actually did something with the title sequence this time.
That's true. It does. It is a great piece of music. I think they did actually bring Jerry Goldsmith back to record or to write the theme song for Voyager. It's a great piece of music. The images they've got are really good. They're taking advantage of computer-generated imagery to really show off the ship. Yeah, I have no problem with it. It's just kind of boring. I think it's like the standard for what a Star Trek opening title sequence should be like.
I think it's the standard for what every opening sequence was expected to be like from DS9 forward.
Right, okay, because, sure.
You know, DS9 shows the station, and later they added a few more runabouts. And I guess the Defiant comes in, and you know, they kind of pepped it up. They added more shit. I can see them in the boardroom at the studio going, you know, I think what would really help the ratings of Deep Space Nine is if we added like three more runabouts flying by the logo in the title sequence, because people aren't quite sure about what show this is. You
know, people love runabouts. Like we've been polling the 18 to 35 demo, and among white males in the South, runabouts are pulling high. Runabouts are pulling strong.
They're all like the Rio Grande. It's nice, but you know, the Yangtze Kian, that's my runabout.
That's my runabout. And the one problem is they did pep it up, and I do like the pepped up DS9 title sequence, but at the exact same time, they butchered the theme song. They just tore it all to shreds, and they added like a bass line that doesn't quite match the melody,
right,
and some weird drums. So I at this point, you should see me in my mad scramble for my PS3 controller. Every time the teaser ends on a DS9 episode, because I'm just skipping that title sequence as fast as possible. But I don't mind it so much in the early seasons when the song is good, pretty good. I'd rate DS9 fairly high, probably not as high as Voyager, maybe, I don't know.
Nah, for me, the theme song for me, the theme from DS9, I like better than Voyager. It's just a very beautiful theme.
It's just really boring. I think it's like that slow pan over DS9. It's like really, really far away, and the music's really slow. I can like feel people switching over to Honey Boo Boo.
It is. But if you go back to First Run, after The Next Generation, it was a big signal that this is a totally different show. You know, this isn't, we're not just making another Next Generation here.
Yeah.
This is really different. So I think it worked. But so why don't we back up? Okay, Voyager won the poll with 38% of the vote. We talked about Enterprise already. I agree with you. I think creatively for me, Enterprise has the best opening of any of the series. And I know that we'll get all kinds of mail from people that think we're crazy because we like the opening of Enterprise, yeah. But creatively, it tells the story of the transition from our day to the Star Trek universe. It's just a really well done opening sequence. And it finished third in this poll with 16% of the vote, which I was surprised because I was expecting it to finish last because everyone just loves to hate the opening of Enterprise.
Yeah.
What I don't really understand here is that the number two finisher with 21% of the vote is The Next Generation.
Yeah, and essentially, as you were saying, the title sequence is basically the D flying past camera and people's names up on screen. It's not too exciting.
No, exactly. I think it's a case where often with the StarTrek.com polls, I think that the people don't understand the actual question because there was one about Spock or something a while back where... So the question is not which series had the best theme song. The question is which series had the best opening title sequence. Those are the visuals and the music and everything rolled up into one package. Yes, the Next Generation theme, which is, you know, born of the motion picture, is wonderful, and it's what everyone thinks of when they think of Star Trek now. But let's be honest. The title sequence for The Next Generation is the Enterprise flying past people's names a few times.
Yes.
And that's all it is.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it has, like, a couple things. It's got, like, the Saturn and a few planets that we see that we fly past. But, you know, compare that to Voyager, and it's a lot more, a lot less boring. I do think a lot of what people are latching onto here, aside from just, you know, which series do they love the best, it does have Sir Patrick Stewart. And he's intoning those immortal words from Zefram Cochran, you know, Space, the Final Frontier, etc.
Okay.
And that is really powerful, and that does key me in. And that's almost as strong in my heart as hearing Faith of the Heart and seeing those visuals. So I think that might put it above Voyager and DS9 for a lot of people.
Okay, that's a good point. I'll give you that one. So having Patrick Stewart's voiceover.
But then what they have at the very bottom of the poll is TOS, which that has William Shatner doing it originally, doing that great monologue originally. I think he really nails it. As much as we can talk about Shatner overacting, he really does nail the monologue.
He really does nail the monologue. Well, I would fully expect Captain Kirk to nail pretty much anything that he set his mind or mouth to in the case of this voiceover.
But as you say, TOS is the genesis of the Enterprise flying past camera motif, which I'm glad they didn't continue because, okay, they might have been able to pull that off with Voyager and have Voyager fly past camera, but it was going to be really lame that they had to keep cranking up the DS9's impulse engines to have it sort of lumber past camera really slowly six times.
The title sequence takes 10 minutes to get through everyone's names.
Avery Brooks as Captain Benjamin Sisko. Alexander Siddig as Dr. Bashir. Yeah, and after as you say, 6 or 7 minutes of that, they're definitely switching over to Honey Boo Boo.
You know, people today watching the original series in the remastered and the title sequence has been redone.
Oh, yeah.
They miss out on the effect that we had back in the 70s when we're watching these reruns. And that was best summed up by Dennis Miller one time, who said that when he was a kid, he and his friends would get together, get stoned, watch Star Trek, and try to figure out which star was going to become the Enterprise as it flew out at you. Because the effects on the original, you know, everything was wobbly. All the stars were wobbly, too. And you kind of weren't sure which one of those things was the Enterprise until it was getting bigger and flying at you.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So Voyager, Next Generation, then Enterprise, then with 14%, Deep Space Nine, 11%, the original series.
Yeah, which that's not quite how I would rate it. I'd probably say Enterprise, then Next Gen, then Voyager, then DS9, then TOS. I definitely agree with putting TOS at the bottom because, for God's sakes, I mean, it's not horrible or anything. I don't think any of the title sequences are horrible, but I definitely put it at the bottom just for sheer... simplicity. There's just not that much going on.
Right, right. Yeah, none of them are horrible. We're not saying that we don't like any of them, but...
Aside from DS9 post-season 3, for God's sakes,
well,
make
see,
it stop.
Well, that's you. See, I like it. Now, when that first came out, I agree. I was, especially as a musician, I'm like, not only am I a musician, but I'm a bass trombonist. So the bass line is the first thing that I pick up on. And I'm like, you know, guys, this bass line, it actually does not mesh with the melody.
It doesn't.
It's a little bit off and it's kind of weird. But in retrospect, I kind of feel like the way that show finished and with the war and with the kind of the conflict of the show, the fact that bass line and the melody don't quite mesh with each other, it kind of works for me. It's kind of highlights the fact that in this universe of Deep Space Nine, there is this dissonance going on all the time.
Hmm. So you're saying that bass line is like a motif of the Vorta and the Dominion sort of entering the picture and sort of throwing off everyone's rhythm.
It's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that if you listen to the bass line, if you pick it out, you can pick out in Morse code, they actually spell out Jeffrey Combs. There's a method to their madness. You thought they just didn't know what they were doing, but they did. They knew. He's everywhere. He's even in your bass line.
Let's go, girls.
After 3 years and 80 episodes, the original series finally decided to wrap it up, and they did it with a lot of moaning, William Shatner acting like a woman, and Sulu and Chekhov standing around exchanging glances. It was an interesting episode, and that was The Turnabout Intruder, and that's what we're going to talk about today for The Ready Room 69. And to help us do that, we have with us our TOS editor, Drew Stewart. Hello, Landrew. How are you?
I'm doing good today. Thank you.
I definitely hope that you are of the body for this show.
I'm definitely of the body.
We also have with us our managing editor and Voyager editor, Mistress Charlene Smith. Hello, Char.
Charlene Smith, huh?
What did I say?
I just heard Smit, not Schmidt. I'm just
did I?
Bragging on you. I'm nitpicking, yeah. And I'm not of the body. I'm having an out-of-body experience thanks to the vodka I'm drinking.
You have the vodka.
I have the vodka. I'll find the nuclear vessels.
And also to help us celebrate the show today, first time on The Ready Room, from Broadcast, playing Doctor and Dork Trek, it's Lieutenant Commander Jenny Zell. Hello, Jenny.
Hello. My body is ready, and I'm here. Thank you for letting me be on your show.
Welcome all.
Oh, we're glad to have you. We've been wanting to have you on the show for quite a while.
Good. I'm glad to be here. And I've been really excited to talk about an original series episode because... from Dork Trek, it seems so very far away. Right now, we're still in Next Generation. We're going to get through, you know, Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise and all these other things before the original series. And it's, I kind of go back and forth between original series and Next Generation as my favorite. So
I kind of feel like Dork Trek would be better off going from TNG to TOS. It seems much more ripe for Dork Trek's take than DS9. I'm really not sure what you're going to do with episodes like Waltz, where you've got like an intense conversation between Tikat and Sisko. Mm-hmm. No, TOS is perfect for what you guys do.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
They're going to talk about, after that conversation is resolved, when Sisko and Tikat, when they go back to Sisko's quarters and... finish hashing things out. And
yes, that's a slash fiction I won't be writing.
But me neither.
Might not mind reading it.
So let's just jump in. So Jenny, I'm sure you're thrilled that your first chance to talk about TOS with us, we picked what is probably the most bafflingly bad episode of the original series.
Yes.
Possibly Save and the Children Shall Lead or The Way to Eden. We've chosen Turnabout Intruder. Now, Char, how did this happen? I think you and I chose this episode on iMessage, right?
Yes, because it's episode 69. And so we thought to torture Landru more than anything, really, I think. We were going to go all out and find the most perverted episode title we possibly could. And so we were exploring things. I don't remember the other titles that we were contemplating. Do you?
Well, we may not remember, but Greg may, because Greg proceeded to go through all 727 episodes of Star Trek and send me a list of every title that he thought might be appropriate for our 69th show.
And anything that was possibly innuendo-filled or could be construed as being an innuendo.
Wow, I'm impressed, Greg. That's dedication.
It is. It actually filled three entire screens on my iPad. Not my iPhone, but my iPad.
Wow.
Inexplicably, he left Shades of Grey off the list, the TNG second season finale.
Can't imagine
and
why.
I don't understand
That's true.
How that did.
And yet,
off.
Somehow we landed with this.
Yes, so here we are. We're with Turnabout Intruder.
Well, it does have a very perverted title if you just think about it a little bit.
See, I didn't catch that. Let me think about it. Hold on.
And I'm not surprised, Landru.
You've got it.
Oh, ew. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Now you got it.
Yeah.
You know, if I were tweeting right now, it would be that moment when Landru realizes what the title means.
And this is the point where Landru realizes exactly where this show is headed. And
oh, no.
What am I doing?
One of these days, I'm going to be able to have a serious discussion of TOS.
No.
One of these days.
That is not this day.
No way, buddy. Not happening.
Serious discussion of Bread and Circuses is coming up. Don't worry.
It is coming up. We're going to talk about the business model of the television industry on the planet and, you know, how, right, like reality shows on present-day Earth, the whole, you know, space gladiator battle thing, it really saved a sinking industry there.
Right. See, we need to do City on the Edge of Forever, and that'll sober you guys right up.
There you go. There's nothing funny in that episode at all.
Well, nothing except for the Andorian fight scene when the Andorian tries to save Edith Keeler.
That's right! So I'm calling bullshit right here.
All right, guys. Okay, so what does the title mean in the context of TOS and this episode? Oh. Who, I guess Janice is the turnabout intruder. She's intruding in Kirk's body, I guess.
Turnabout.
That's one way of interpreting it. Yes. See, the thing is, there's so many ways you could go with this, but that's probably the most logical one.
And my mind went right to the dirty one. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah. How can it not?
You have to think about the other third season episodes we've got here. I mean, the titles, you know, For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky and, you know, Elon of Troyes and all these terrible, really weird titles. Turnabout Intruder was just something they pulled like those magnet things.
Right.
The fridge magnets. With the different words, and they stuck them all together and like Turnabout Intruder.
Oh, it's like Blade Runner, where, you know, it's based on Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, but they thought that was a horrible title, so they literally found some other script and just stole its title. Like that script is actually about knife smugglers, so it made sense.
Really?
But no, we're just gonna say Harrison Ford's playing a Blade Runner because we like this title so much.
I had no idea. That's incredible.
Wow.
It wouldn't surprise me if Turnabout Intruder was some other script that was about actual... But I don't even know what is a Turnabout Intruder in a reasonable script.
That's just the thing. How do you define this? That's what we're struggling with right here. There is no easy solution.
Okay. What's a better title?
Oh,
that's a good question.
Freaky Friday?
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
I'm going to go with Freaky Friday.
All the moaning?
All the moaning. This is very, very Freaky Friday. I'm thinking of all the other times that there's been body switching done. And I was actually missing when Janice does her little body switch with Kirk, and Kirk wakes up and he's in Janice's body. What's the first thing you do when you wake up in a woman's body?
You check yourself out.
You grab your breasts. This is what you do immediately. And then you find a mirror and take off your shirt. I don't know. Was this deleted from the episode? Did it not pass the censors? Okay. I kept waiting for the moment.
I have a theory about this because behind the scenes, we know there was a lot of fondling going on. Okay? Because I'm glad I'm not the only person that was thinking this, because Kirk in a woman's body, you know, he was exploring constantly.
This is why it took him so long to take back control of the ship, because he was locked up in his quarters.
Yes. Especially in that skimpy little nightgown and sick bay. I mean, yes, easy access. Really.
Did anyone see his hands?
That's
where all the moaning was.
Oh, God. Nurse Chapel comes in the room, and suddenly all the fantasies he's ever had.
Dude! That's why she's wearing that short skirt.
Yes. Talk about easy access.
I missed that part.
He's laying there and he calls up to the bridge to Sulu and he says, Sulu, I need to go on a mapping mission, but I can't do it alone. And could you set a course?
Could you hit a lot of turbulence really fast, really fast?
Could you get into an asteroid belt or something, please? Well, that happened awfully fast.
It did. Well,
is it already 58 minutes?
Wow.
No, it's 58 seconds this week.
Okay,
58
all right.
Seconds.
Oh, okay. New record.
So this episode
I just like watching Chris trying to keep us under control.
See, it's too bad that I'm the one who has to take the screenshots, because I can't do this yes. with my hands and take a screenshot of yes. this at the same time to tweet. So the whole thing here, okay, Shatner, I'm watching this episode, I think in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
We mentioned what a terrible, and maybe we did at the beginning of the show, I can't remember anymore, what a terrible finale this was yeah. for the series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, someone said, you know, it's our last episode, let's just go all out. Let's have Shatner act like a woman for the whole episode. Let's make Sulu and Chekhov be buddies. And let's don't give them any lines, but let's just make sure that they're always just standing right next to each other. I mean, Chekhov and Sulu,
they are like
the Miles and Jules of TOS in this episode.
They are. They've got a weird concerned look going on through the whole court martial. They don't say anything. They're just... Let's just cut to Sulu and Chekhov sort of making pained expressions.
Yes. With merging right. hairdos, am I right?
Oh, yes.
That's right. When they're sitting, the only time that they do have lines and they're sitting on the bridge. And I was thinking, you know, if there were just, it's too bad this is the last episode, because if there were just a few more episodes, that hairstyle was just going to become one. Chekhov and Sulu were going to become one.
Well, let's not forget the season 4 episode of TOS, which was Suchov. And it's
yes, okay. I was going to talk about this.
There was a transporter accident, and they became one.
Exactly. Had they continued, that would have been the next episode. The merged yes. hairdo would have become an entity, obtained consciousness, and taken over the ship.
No, but the only thing that could stop it would be Shatner's hairpiece.
Right. Yes.
It jumps so off his head and attacks them.
Yeah, so it's like this battle of two hairy beasts. Just,
and it turns out they're really tribbles.
That's the surprise ending.
Right.
The Tribble King has been living on Shatner's head this whole time.
Wow. If only we would have known.
I mean, this is perfect. Greg and I have been pitching some ideas to Dayton for some of our non-canon novel ideas.
Yes, this is one of them.
I think we really we need to get Dayton to actually write this story.
Yeah.
Right? Because
yeah.
he likes to write TOS.
And it makes you look at all of TOS with like this whole other viewpoint when you realize that this antagonist has been on the bridge watching.
This whole time. I mean, think of all the things that it knows.
I know. The hairpiece likes to watch. That's...
It's been there during all the mapping missions.
It was there for the fondling. For who knows how many sexual encounters. Oh, my word.
All of the green aliens.
There's no going back.
Okay, so I know we want to talk about Shatner's woman acting. But I guess a good lead-in to that might be, Greg, you wanted to talk about this whole trope of body switching.
Yes.
So why don't you guide us into some place here?
Well, let's not forget story by Gene Roddenberry. Like, this wasn't after they'd let the interns take over the asylum. This was Gene Roddenberry saying, I've always wanted to do an episode where Kirk switches bodies with an evil ex-girlfriend. Like, is this like a fantasy or a nightmare that Roddenberry's had? He has a lot of ex-girlfriends at this point.
It's gotta be.
And yeah, he's just wondering, like, what's gonna happen? One of these days they're gonna trap me, they're gonna switch bodies, and they're gonna take over Star Trek. And I'm not gonna be able to do anything.
This is him playing out that fantasy and trying to prepare himself for what's going to happen. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, but yeah, who really wanted a body switching episode of Star Trek? Is it as bad as an idea as it sounds on paper, or do you guys have some ideas where this could have turned out really well?
I think if the main plot wasn't the fact that she wanted to switch bodies with him just because she felt bad for being a woman,
I think
it would have been better. If she had like a goal, not just to perfectly replace, like, where did she get all this information? Yeah. You know, like Kirk starts talking about these past missions, and Spock's like, you totally could have read that in the newspaper. I'm like, really? The episode Tholian Web? Really going to other, she could just, everybody has access to these logs and stuff?
It's in Space USA Today.
Oh yeah, there you go.
And how does she know like how he acts now? Like she dated him in college. And I'm a lot different than I was in college. I can't imagine somebody trying to act like me now, only having known me in college and what they've read on Twitter.
Well, to I don't be think fair, Kirk really she... changes that much.
He doesn't.
Okay, maybe not.
Then, okay, here's the thing: she is definitely smack of the stalker type. Am I right?
Yeah.
So she's probably stalking him on Facebook and finding out what he's up to, that sort of thing.
She doesn't follow him on Twitter, but she's got a saved search for him.
Exactly.
She checks every 10 minutes.
She knows what he's up to. And so, you know, whenever he writes, I hooked up with another green, you know, alien chick, she gets insanely ragefully jealous.
Yes.
And so that's fueling all of this. And then the fact that she hates being a woman so much, that just adds even more fuel to the fire. And then you've got this crazy psycho bitch, and that's Janice Lester.
She's and what's her line? She says that this world of starship captains doesn't admit women. But it does. Like, there's been plenty of women captains over the years.
It's bullshit.
It's like, no, it's just
there's
that
one
this
sitting
world...
on the bridge right now at communications. Even though it's not Uhura, it's another woman.
She's so delusional. Where did she get this crazy idea?
They don't let insane women, right?
Yeah, they don't let the mentally ill captain starships. Yes. I'm sorry, you need meds first, okay? God.
That whole conversation at the beginning cracked me up. Kirk is, I never stopped you from going on with your space work.
He says space work. It's hilarious.
Space work.
It's almost as good as Spacebook. Spacebook, that was pretty good.
Well, I Spacebook, I do space work. And it's listed on Spacebook.
It was almost... So they were supposed to have been a couple, right, at the academy or in college
Kirk.
Or whatever they say.
And
Kirk needs boundaries. It's almost like when I'm watching on Twitter, like, two people who are, like, supposed to be having this romantic conversation, like, wide out in the open, like they don't know that the whole world can read their timeline. But they're really bad at it. And Kirk's like, I never stopped you from going on with your space work. Oh, your world of starship captains doesn't admit women. It isn't fair. No, it isn't. You punished and tortured me because of it. I loved you. We could have roamed among the stars. We'd have killed each other. It might have been better. And then both
She's
of their
so
threads
emo.
Become locked. So oh,
She's man. Always had a death wish. I'm just realizing this now. She's always wanted to die. But she yeah. just wanted
well, this
to
is
take
the
Kirk
thing.
With
like,
her.
Kirk broke up with her because she was crazy. Like, she was like this in college, too. Trust me. Like, people don't change. Like, everybody's got an ex-girlfriend like this or an ex-boyfriend who is so crazy, and they didn't realize that your relationship was over, and they just wanted to just switch bodies with you and take over your life. Like, everyone's made that at least that one mistake.
Right. It should have been like that episode of New Girl where Nick decides to get back together with the crazy girlfriend from the past.
Right.
I think Spock and Bones and Scotty, they should have set Kirk down in the captain's chair, and on the view screen they should have played that video that Kirk recorded for his future self.
Yes.
Where he has the scraggly beard and he's drunk. And he's like, "You remember Janice Lester, right? Janice Lester killed you once. Don't let her kill you again."
Janice Lester is a crazy bitch, man. I'm serious.
Speaking of Janice Lester, so I'm watching this episode in here, and the whole body switching thing. I'm watching this episode, and I have the screen paused, and it's just a picture of Janice. And you can't really tell it's Star Trek or anything. And so my wife comes in, and she goes, "Who's that?" And I said, "Oh, it's Janice Lester. She switched bodies with Captain Kirk." And my wife, who's not actually a TOS fan at all, but, you know, everyone knows Captain Kirk, she says, "Oh, is he hitting on women? Is this a lesbian episode?"
That's funny. My wife walked in while I was watching it, and she's just like, "So what's going on?" I started explaining to the plot, and she's like, "I really don't care." And then she turned around and walked out.
That's what my husband would do, too.
Yeah, this is a TOS episode that's kind of hard to explain to people, like, why you're watching it. Like, the plot doesn't really go anywhere, right?
Right.
Like, they switch bodies, and then she tries really hard to pretend to be Captain Kirk and fails miserably at every moment.
And Other tries to kill Janice Lester as Captain Kirk. Kirk Lester.
Right. Yeah,
whatever.
I mean, what was her plan? Like, she was just going to be Captain Kirk for the rest of her life and just continue on?
That's as far as she thought it out, yes.
This is,
I'm going to go into my quarters and take off my shirt and check this out.
Shatner gets off his shirt quite a lot in this episode.
He does. He noticeably does. Yes. This is all part of, I think, Shatner going all out for the last Trek outing. Because not only is he a woman, but he's taking off his shirt, he's overacting, he's doing it all.
I noticed he was definitely trying to suck in his gut and cover up his abs as much as possible, like with the towel. You know, he gets them off the table and he just immediately hangs the towel over it and he's like, standing up straight, sucking in the gut.
That's one thing. I've been watching Scott Bakula as Captain Archer. That man has a physique. I don't know if he's going to personal trainer every day. He's the first captain that doesn't have to be sucking in his gut. It's quite impressive. So I don't know. Shatner didn't have a personal trainer, or he just started really going for the vodka or whatever, drinking his calories away.
The vodka.
But that's right. Shatner really went downhill over the course of TOS.
Consider this. They didn't have personal trainers really back
that's
in
probably
1969.
True.
I mean, and that if didn't you wanted fit in to lose budget. Weight, you do drugs and starve yourself.
That's right.
That's what you do. But he didn't really quite go that route.
I'm glad we didn't get Shatner on drugs, because this is normal Shatner. This is what Shatner thinks regular TV acting is like.
Yes. Yes. And he's doing an incredible job at it, no less.
You have to admire William Shatner in this episode, because
you do, yes.
Who else could pull this off? He does everything in here. I love the whole posture thing as he walks around the ship. This is what he thinks a woman walks like, apparently.
Yeah, right? Which I can't say I've never done. I don't know about you, Jenny.
Not that I remember, no.
I mean, maybe I should start. I don't know.
I mean...
Please, but the thing is, take a video of yourself acting like Kirk, acting like James Lester.
Maybe I might when do I'm that. Sober.
Here's a cosplay idea to add to our whiteboard, Greg, for Star Trek Las Vegas, okay?
It's already so full.
I want Drew to walk around pretending to be Charlene. And I want to see what this is going to look like.
Oh my God. This I want to see.
Make sure that he's got the bondage juck with him.
He better. That's a requirement, Landrew.
So hold on. I've got a serious question, ladies.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know this. Being a guy, would you rather die than live alone as a woman?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's torture. Okay. It's horrible. We bleed for 7 days and don't die.
Mm-hmm.
I mean. What worse living experience could you possibly have?
Oh man, yeah, this.
I'm glad they didn't work that into this episode because I did not want to see William Shatner try to pull that off.
I'm so sorry. It's the only thing I could think of that would justify wanting to die.
That would have been a whole other thing. Not only is William Shatner inside of James Lester's body, he's also PMSing really badly.
Oh, that would have been horrible.
He could have pulled it off. I'm convinced that Shatner could have pulled it off.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. I want to see that now.
Can someone show me how to use these space Tampax?
I want to see this now. Give me chocolate, lab replicator! Damn it!
He's just munching on space chocolate.
I'm so pissed off at the world.
Plus, Jenny, in the 23rd century, those are sold under the brand name the Tholian Web.
That's right.
So this does bring us to the deleted line that Spock had at the end. So Kirk sort of mumbles at the end of the episode. The greatest final line for Star Trek, you know, things would have been fine if only. And originally Spock was due to say, if only she could have taken pride in being a woman. So this is Gene Roddenberry saying, come on, ladies, like seriously, come on, what's wrong with you? Why do you keep complaining?
Was this trying to be a feminist episode?
I think, is that what
they were going for?
So originally there was actually going to be a moral to this story instead of this crazy woman doesn't want to be a woman anymore. She's stupid.
Okay, wait a minute. If that was it, it failed so horribly.
Yes. Well, it's the 1960s attempt to talk about feminism and say, you know, it's okay to be a woman.
Right, yeah. That's why you wear the short skirt.
When it's wrapped up in the 60s way of thinking to us now, it comes across as like, oh my God, I can't believe that you just said that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is true. It's unbelievably sexist.
But to them, they're thinking, oh, that was a good line right there. That's really going to get through to everybody.
Well,
I can't believe they let us put that on television.
There is something here. You know, they've approached racism before by showing the half-white race and then the half-white, half-black race. So they are, okay, they're trying to do feminism here. They're trying to show that... What are they trying to show, though? Like, what is their real moral?
That women are crazy?
Exactly. That's what they ended up doing. Sort of like Angel One we talked about, where they were trying to make a point about how... women should be at the same level as men because look at this other society and they're doing it just fine and there's men trying to fight for equality, but they bumble it completely because it's the 80s and they have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, we want to do space work too.
Right.
Here, come on.
It is a real thing for her to say, this world of starship captains does not admit women, because what if Gene Roddenberry had tried to pitch, you know, a female captain? He tried to pitch a female first officer. He tried to put his girlfriend in theirs as number one. And the network completely shot it down.
True.
So to some extent, this is Gene Roddenberry taking a shot at the network, taking a shot at America, and saying, you made her do this. Like, this is what this insane society does to women.
It makes them want to swap bodies?
Well, okay. Yes. And that's where the ridiculousness of it kind of kills the moral. But there is a sense of where it's, you made this happen. So maybe you should take a look at yourself, America, and realize that you shouldn't be treating women so badly because you're going to make them go crazy and switch bodies and try to take over your life.
That's right. You did this to me. It's your fault. Fuck you.
And playing the part of Brian Finifter on today's show is Charlene Schmidt.
Thank you, Charlene.
You're welcome. I couldn't help myself. I'm sorry.
Oh, the profanity.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. Correct.
This, for those of you who are wondering why Char's Twitter name is Oh, the Profanity.
There That's it why. Is. So, that's right.
But, I mean, yeah, I mean, you do make a good point, Greg, actually, about this episode. And I don't mean actually that you made a good point. I mean that you were able to pull that out of this episode.
It's in there somewhere.
Out of the what of this episode?
It's in there somewhere. That's what she said. It's in there somewhere. And oh, everyone could just see Jenny right now.
Oh, my goodness.
We told Jenny to behave.
I know. I'm a little disappointed that I am on very good behavior on your show.
You are.
You know? And
dude, this is show 69. What did you expect?
Well, we're only 30 minutes in. So you have plenty of time left.
So I have time to catch up. Okay.
Yes. You need to drink more wine. So,
Gene Roddenberry, you know, it's like with Uhura, you know, his position kind of, they say, the networks say, well, you can't have a female first officer. You have to have a male first officer. He's like, okay, well, I'll have a male first officer, but I'm going to have a female communications officer and she's going to be black. What do you think about that?
Aha.
In the 1960s, it's kind of like, okay, I'll give you this studio, but you're going to let me do this. And it's actually, I'm going to kill two birds with one stone on my agenda here.
Yeah.
I've always applauded TOS for doing that, for having a female African-American person on the bridge, but they never do anything with her.
Yeah.
The fact that she still acts like a 60s woman, you know, with the short skirt and the damsel in distress, and you know, they wipe her memory in the changeling completely.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh my
and they,
gosh.
They, yeah. they teach her how to read and she's fine. That's all she needs.
Yeah, the ball is like, bluey.
Oh. Yeah. It takes good steps, but then it stops.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he was working against the light. I think you do have to applaud Gene Roddenberry for pushing this stuff through, because if it were left up to the studio, all these things about TOS that we consider groundbreaking for the time wouldn't have happened. It would have just been a vanilla, watered-down show. And because of that, we probably wouldn't have any of the other Star Trek that we have now either.
It's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is true.
So for all this stuff that, you know, TOS tried to work in, when I'm watching this episode, knowing it's the final episode, it feels weird. I feel like the characters feel out of character. I felt like DeForest Kelly as Bones is the only character in this episode who actually feels like himself.
Word.
Spock even feels off for me. Kirk is obviously off because they decided for the very last time that you see Captain Kirk on Star Trek, let's have him play a woman, not himself.
And, yeah, why not?
And but I feel like it's like, let's throw in everything into this episode. So, of course, you've got Nurse Chapel coming in, who inexplicably has brown hair now. You've got, let's get Shatner topless as much as possible.
Let's
do the little exercise thing where you put your legs up on the wall and you like you pump air.
Yeah.
Like that comes from, I think they did that in The Man Trap, didn't they?
I think so. That was one of early Kirk's early things, yes.
It's like every little thing that they can find to throw in. Let's throw it in. You know, let's have a mutiny. You can't have a mutiny on a starship.
Let's have a court martial.
Yeah.
That's true. Yes.
Let's do it all. Come on.
Is there a single TOS episode where they don't mention a mutiny? I feel like every episode I've seen recently, they have some sort of mutiny Zoom going on.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that Scotty and McCoy got to have their mutiny.
Okay,
finally,
but
in this episode that they were talking about in Gamesters of
Yes,
yeah.
And of course, Scotty's like, we're going to have to take over the ship. And yes, and it's just like they spell it out completely. Like, really, you guys suck at doing conspiracy. Let's take over the ship by overthrowing the captain, who is the legitimate leader of the ship and would be punishable by death, probably. Let's do that.
And let's plan it out right on the other side of the door. It's like when you go out of the room.
Yes. Well, this is always my question about starships. Like, don't they have microphones and cameras everywhere?
Like, right. Well, yes, they really do. Make so they plans. Recorded it.
Well,
and so then it was used right afterward to use as evidence against them, and then boom, ha, roasted.
Yeah, the issue being that Kirk, as Lester as Kirk, the bad person, when they were talking to the other doctor, totally was just like, you totally killed all these people for me. Why would you not kill, you know, Kirk and Janice Lester's body right in the middle of sickbay? And it's like, if your plot of the show is going to end with, you know, people using recordings against somebody, you can't have somebody saying incriminating themselves earlier and not have that be recorded.
Yeah.
Truth.
It's lazy.
It's kind of like the whole thing with the logs. You know, she's recording the personal logs.
Yes, really.
Like, yeah.
This is recorded in the ship.
I'd never thought about that.
It's like
she's sending these back to Starfleet.
Right, that gets beamed back to Starfleet. Even the ones that you tag like personal log, no, there's still somebody at Starfleet that listens to that and is logging it in, you know, whatever their version of Memory Alpha is. Like when you say I'm Janice Lester and I'm pretending to be Captain Kirk, that's not private. Like you don't get to just say that.
And how does Kirk as Janice Lester record a captain's log from sickbay?
I am Captain Kirk.
I don't know how long it's been since I've been in this female body. It's like, what? Wait, how are you recording this?
I do understand. I would have lost track of time, how long I'd been in a female body as well.
You would, Greg. You would.
Because you would just be in a room with the shades drawn.
Yes. Yes.
You know Sulu is back in his quarters all the time, just recording captain's logs.
Yeah. I am so definitely bored is. Right now. I'm going to fondle myself one day, again.
One day I'm going to be the captain.
One day. Captain's log started at 7154.5. This has not gotten boring yet.
This is awesome, actually. I'm going to fondle myself again and log. You know that's what he did. You know that's what he did. Come on, let's not mince words here.
He's saying, I'm so glad that Starfleet, you know, has this regulation that I must spend time with the captain's log every day.
Yes.
Oh.
Everything is off the rails at this point.
It is. Okay, so taking it back to a serious moment here. So I was talking
what?
To Larry yesterday, and and we were talking, and I asked him, I said, what do you think about Turnabout Intruder? Because we're going to do this on the show this week, and he actually had a good point about Turnabout Intruder. It's the only time in the original series that Scotty and Bones actually get a good scene together.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay,
you're right.
But,
it's something
but
you don't even notice.
Okay, you're right. But Scotty is in a really weird role here. He's playing prosecutor. And then he's talking about mutiny, minus the mutiny Zoom, mind you, with Bones.
True.
And it's kind of awkward.
The whole court-martial is awkward. It's very thrown in. It's like, Janice's Kirk just decides he wants to kill Captain Kirk. So he throws together this court-martial and decides, you know, I understand I'm completely losing control of the situation, but my best thing is to have the crew vote on whether or not I'm Captain Kirk. It's like, you're really not convincing anybody you're Captain Kirk by just continuing to be really, really freaking crazy.
Right. Like, people are, they're not sure about it, right? This is where the episode turns into Survivor. Yeah. I felt like they're going into tribal council and they're out in the corridor and Scotty's like, look, okay, look, you vote Kirk with me. It's 2-1. And then now we're going to tell Sulu and Chekov that we're going to vote Kirk, but they're going to flip to Janice.
That's yeah, exactly really. Right.
You almost thought that, like, William Shatner, he was going to, like, play a hidden immunity idol suddenly.
You know, okay, so I had this thought while watching the episode. What if we, as the audience, weren't sure? What if they right. really did the whole episode and we didn't know if this was Captain Kirk or not? And actually, it would be much cooler if it was Captain Kirk the whole
yes.
time.
Yes,
but
I'm
his
so
actions made people mistrust him.
That would be yes. a much better episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up because I thought if they would have actually thought about how they were writing this, they would have done it this way. And it would have been so cool figuring out, okay, what the heck is going on here? Is it Captain Kirk? Isn't it?
Yeah.
What in the world? I don't know who to yeah. believe. I don't know what to believe.
Yeah.
That would have been
it would
so
have been,
awesome.
It would have been better like those Voyager episodes, like Resolutions that started, you know, after they'd been working on the problem for a while. Something kind of like
true.
Kirk is like a chief medical officer's log. Kirk has been acting really strange recently, blah, 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 and let us ride along with it. But I don't think that TV in the 60s was like that.
Well, they did something similar with that with what was the episode called? Was it the Enterprise incident? Where they
that's true.
Are going
that's
to steal
true.
A cloaking device. They actually do handle that situation kind of well there.
And you know what? That episode's really, really good.
It
I
is.
Really
yes.
enjoyed that episode.
Yeah, if you go to like third season's horrible, it's like, no. Third season
Enterprise
has Enterprise incident.
Incident.
And it may be silly and there may be a Romulan commander who's weird. But yeah, so they managed to do that. So they had gotten to a certain point. This episode just kind of fell apart at the writing stages.
Just a little bit.
It should have been more like Battlestar Galactica, where you're really wondering towards the end, like, who's actually a Cylon, and you don't know. And sometimes you suspect certain people are Cylons, and they turn out not to be. And then there are other people who you're sure are not Cylons, but they are.
So say we all!
But I think that if we took that same episode and edited it differently, it still would be bad, because Shatner's not acting like Kirk, which is good for Shatner to, you know, act.
Yeah, he's...
But I can't see how Sulu and Chekov could be confused at any point.
Well, they're dumb.
This right. woman, this calm, composed woman is, you know, claims to be Captain Kirk, and this psychopath is claiming to be our captain, not acting like himself, not, you know, calling himself Captain Kirk every single time that they can.
Yes. Hello, my name is Captain Kirk. How are you doing? I'm Captain Kirk. Did I mention that I'm Captain Kirk?
Yeah.
Captain
I'm
Kirk to beam
Captain
up.
Captain Kirk. Yeah.
He comes on the bridge and Spock says, Captain on the bridge. And he says, I told you, it's Captain Kirk on the bridge.
Right.
That's right. I'm Captain Kirk. I'm a man now.
Well, I mean, always. So
seems
always.
Legit.
I mean, I've always been. Yeah. I've got a penis.
You guys want to see it?
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Check this out. Yeah.
Final argument. I'm Captain Kirk.
I'm
Check
a
it
man.
Out. He's waving it around.
I can do tricks.
Now I'd like to introduce you to our star witness. Could you please come to the stand?
Heard it. I'm Captain Kirk, damn it. I'm a man.
Oh, gosh.
Oh,
all right.
My God.
So while we're on the subject of mutiny, we talk about mutiny
yes,
Zoom.
Yes.
This episode not only had the mutiny zoom, it had something much better. It had the mutiny tantrum.
Yes.
Yes, it did. Yeah. Yeah. I'm Captain Kirk. I'm Captain Kirk.
You're going to mutiny? Mutiny. You can't mutiny. No, don't mutiny. Please. Yeah. No. Can't mutiny.
Mutiny is a on my crime. Ship. It's punishable by death.
They missed a big opportunity here, too, because really, if they really... So, Drew, you said in the other side of the room...
The other side of the room.
You found some threads of continuity in here and the way they referenced past episodes. Now, if they were really so good at this, when Kirk is doing his fist, I'm Captain Kirk, the big giant green head would have appeared.
Yes.
And told him that it's time to bring the children home. Totally missed opportunity. I mean, they had the footage. Gosh. Why didn't they use it? I mean, they used the bird of prey explosion everywhere.
Oh, come on. Yeah, why not?
I did like that they did reference a couple past episodes. I mean, they were third season episodes, but they were, I mean, like when Kirk is trying to prove himself, which I, the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, come on, mention things only Spock would know. And he tried, right. And Spock's like, you could do that. And I was like, Spock, mind meld. And Spock did. And I was like, oh, okay, good. So it's not like I'm intensely frustrated at the incompetency of the crew. They didn't try to act competent.
Spock does. He goes into it and does the mind meld, and I really like how the mind meld music starts. It's that yes. Really nice, like smooth 60s bass line.
Yeah.
Like Spock's getting all psychic.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you notice?
That's more like
Nimoy,
it.
Nimoy like passes in front of camera, and while he's passing, he puts his hand on the face. It's like this really nice, like smooth move that he does. He must have practiced it. But yeah, as Chris, you said, like all of a sudden he's psychic, like he's never been able to do this before.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, she mentions his telepathic powers. I'm like, okay, great. Now, 80th episode filmed, suddenly Spock's telepathic.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, wait, no, oh, there okay. are two episodes where he like melds through people through walls and convinces them to do things that they wouldn't normally
Drew,
do.
We have a whole running bit about his ability to mind meld through objects.
He mind melds through
everything, yeah. But Char sent me a message and said, am I watching this correctly? Am I misunderstanding, or is Spock in a three-way now?
He sure is. He is, right? He's in a three-way with Kirk, Spock, and Janice Lester.
But it's not Janice Lester.
Maybe it was Kirk's plan all along to get Spock in a three-way. Huh?
Nice!
There we go.
Secret is the last chance, because it was the last episode of the series.
Go for it. Yeah.
Do it. Yeah. Oh, this is awesome. This is why this was the last episode of the original Star Trek.
But the music was great, and I wish they had carried that forward. So, like, in the movies when Spock mind melds, they should have played that music. Like, can you imagine the scene, like, in Star Trek VI when Spock is mind melding with Valeris on the bridge and that music kicks in?
I'm actually kind of missing. There's the episode of Enterprise where T'Pol meets the weird Vulcans who are kind of going crazy and they're bringing back the mind meld. And there's this crazy like jazz. There's like this smooth jazz that plays as T'Pol is having this like crazy dream. And I really want to insert that here. Where Spock starts hearing the smooth jazz.
Nice.
Exactly. That's the origin of the mind meld music that we hear in this episode.
Right.
It all started back with the jazz back in the 22nd century.
Yeah.
There you go.
I think it probably even goes back further than that.
It's what they were playing in Starbucks in the 22nd century.
Right.
Exactly. And you could buy the CD at the register back when they still used money.
Yeah, but you say that they threw everything into this episode, but if you really look at it, it is like the biggest bottle show. It's like the bottle show's bottle show.
Dude.
It's all on standing sets. There's like two guest actors that really aren't even in it that much.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the cheapest episode they've done. I think, Chris, you said they filmed it for about 69 cents.
That's
69
right.
cents. Mm-hmm. They found a green cafeteria that wasn't yeah. being used, and they just set up shop, and half the episode takes place in there.
It was at a community college, actually.
It was, yes.
Same
it was
difference.
At a community college.
Whatever. I like the big space hieroglyphic machine thing that they built for this episode.
Well, that was, it was down. I mean, I think in the other side of the room, I said it was filmed in the Garden Sitter in Home Depot. Of course, this was in the 60s, so it was actually filmed at a Woolworths.
There you go.
Right outside in the back.
How did Janice convince this guy to help her build this, like, transference machine?
He's a dumb like, pussy.
And like, yeah. hey, why don't you let everybody else in this thing die? And hopefully, like, Captain Kirk will be the one captain in the entire Starfleet that'll be sent back. The yes. one captain I've been studying my entire life.
Like, this well, is your knew. Genius plan? Like, seriously? Like, you're going to lure that one starship captain out of thousands that you're trying
well,
to lure
sounds...
there?
Yeah.
No, it sounds crazy to you guys, but look, she read the other 79 scripts that had been written. She knew that the Enterprise is going to be the ship that they send. They never send
the only
else.
Ship in the quadrant.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
the 79%.
Yeah,
this stuff so, exists yeah. in the future. We're so screwed. Oh my god!
But yeah, basically, in her bedroom, she's got a bed and she's got these space hieroglyphic. That have some kind of body transference system built to them with the sparklies. They're like, it's like, it's bedazzled space hieroglyphics that she has yes. there. And
okay, how did she figure out that it worked? Like, did she test it? Did she switch bodies with the doctor and back
oh, maybe
again?
She
maybe
she did. Maybe
oh, I'm
they
sure
had a couple
did.
Crazy weekends.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yes.
What if the twist at the end had been that actually Janice was Dr. Coleman. Dr. Coleman was Janice.
Oh,
Janice Dr.
Man.
Coleman was Captain Kirk. Janice Dr. Coleman.
Talk about a three-way.
How would that have been for a twist?
Whoa.
Mind blown.
Wow, it's like Inception up in this bitch.
Wow.
You just blew my mind, seriously.
That gives three-way a whole new meaning. Wow.
That's my personal canon now.
That's the ultimate experience
I hope you
right
know that.
There.
Well, it's like that. It's like that strip, that Calvin and Hobbes strip, where Calvin and Hobbes are using the transmogrifying device so many times that they forget which of them is which.
Yes.
Like Calvin's yeah. an owl, but he's like, wait, am I Calvin or am I Hobbes? I don't remember.
You know what? At this point, it doesn't even matter.
Right, because it's canceled. Who cares? Right. It's never going to come up again. I mean, really, Star Trek, it's been canceled. I mean, we're never, ever going to have to worry about this
yeah,
universe ever again.
They should have just ended the show with somebody else as Captain Kirk piloting the ship. Sulu's in Chekhov's body. Who cares?
And the rest of the actual cast, they just walk off. They like they rip their insignia off their yes. sleeves because they don't have pips that they can take off, and yeah. they just rip it and they throw it down. They all just walk off the bridge, and they leave this other guy, Dr. Coleman, and Janice to run the ship.
Yes. Oh,
and then they
man.
Fade to black, and that's the end of Star Trek.
That would have been like you always talk about. You know, when the network really screws you over, you, like, deliver them a really, like, FU finale. Like, that would have been the ultimate FU finale. Just
I seriously. Thought that's what this episode was.
Yeah! Awesome.
It's what it feels like. When I'm watching this episode, I really feel like they're saying, look, we're canceled. I don't care. We've got to film something. Here's an idea. Let's go do.
Screw you guys!
It's
I'm
just
going
the
home.
Weirdest.
You guys are canceled. Yeah. She's just like, I got a yeah. singing gig. Replace yeah. me with the girl from Balance of Terror. Who cares?
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Go on without me. I do not care.
She's like, I'm playing the Blue Note. I got a gig Friday night. Well, can't you reschedule, Nichelle? Look, I've read the script, guys, and you know.
It sucks. Ooh, no,
I get to play
I am
court
not
reporter.
Doing those
Ooh,
lines.
Who cares?
Yeah. Screw you guys. Yeah. I'm going home.
I'll be at the Blue Note if you need me. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm busy.
So, whatever.
I don't blame her one bit.
No.
But I think that Lester played her cards too much when she yelled for the death penalty for all of Kirk's best friends. I mean, had they kept going, she would have called for the death penalty for everybody in the entire ship.
That's very mm-hmm. true.
And it was immediate. An immediate death penalty in half an hour or so. Give me a few minutes.
Yeah.
You know, why don't you go in jail? Why don't you plan some escapes and stuff? And then I'll come get you.
Right.
And then I'll take you to the hangar deck to kill you and not kill you in the hallway, even though I have ample opportunity to.
It's sort of like a cat playing with a mouse. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but she's not enjoying it like a cat does in a mouse. She's like panicking and freaking out. Toward the end of the episode, I'd forgot that Kirk was Janice and Janice was Kirk. And I was just like, kill her. Kill her. Kill her. Just do it. Come on.
Yeah.
Just make there's your true. Opportunity. And there's your opportunity. And there's your opportunity. Just do it.
Yeah. So many missed opportunities, right? And, well, that's kind of where I'm getting the cat and the mouse thing, where it's like, okay, I'm going to kill you now. Bah, 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 bah. And then, well, okay, I'm going to let you linger for a few more seconds. Oh, you're going to try and escape? Really? Oh, okay.
Right. She was like a Bond villain where she's like putting Janice Lester under like the laser machine. And instead of just pointing the laser machine at her head or at his head, it was like going slowly like towards her. Like, no. Just shoot her. Like, just make it stop.
Seriously.
Like, seriously.
Get it done. Brother, come on.
Yeah. And then had to explain everything like in the personal logs and telling people like, I'm really Kirk.
Yeah, come on. We know this already. We knew this from the very beginning. You don't have to explain yourself. Just do it.
She really squirmed it. Like, seriously, if I were Captain Kirk for 5 minutes, I'd just take over the ship. I'd kill the people who mattered and just go on with my life. I'd say they died in a transporter. You know, malfunction. Like, that happens all the time.
Seriously.
It's not that hard to explain these things away.
It's too bad they didn't have Crusher on the ship.
That's
she would
true.
Have taken care of it.
Seriously. God, get with it. Damn.
Yeah, it's like, Captain, why do you keep telling everyone to go down to sick bay to see Dr. Crusher for a checkup? And
flu shots. We need flu shots.
But they never come back. Right. We need flu shots with that gigantic hypo spray that Nurse Chapel had.
Nurse
Chapel,
seriously.
Could you administer
okay.
the sedative? Okay. Wham! That was a huge...
Baseball bat. This is the sedative.
Now we know where season one holographic doctor got his bedside manner.
Now they go.
Right?
He's programmed with Nurse Chapel. That's also why he wears such a short skirt in Caretaker.
Right.
Oh, all right. Well, I don't know. We've covered the death penalty, and I don't know what else there is really for us to hit on in this episode. So
to hit on, really? Sorry, dude, but really?
Well, we're likely to have an extended one here, so why don't we go into our final thoughts segment? And Drew, you're jumping in here, so why don't you give us your final thoughts on Turnabout Intruder?
Okay, when I found out that Char had picked Turnabout Intruder and that Jenny was coming on, I expected the worst, the absolute worst thing ever. But really, it's an entertaining enough episode seeing Shatner acting like a woman acting like Kirk is...
Yes!
It's good. It's not like Face-Off good where, you know... John Travolta is acting like Nicolas Cage, acting like John Travolta, acting like Nicolas Cage, acting like John Travolta, and vice versa. But it's still really fun. Especially like the mutiny freakouts and all that kind of stuff. But in the end, it is frustrating. I like that in the remastered version that it ends with them like flying toward a pretty nebula instead of just empty space. You know, it's kind of an end cap.
Yeah.
I appreciated that notice, that they noticed that there was the last episode.
And when that came on, I was thinking that scene, that final scene of the Enterprise flying out was the best part of this episode when I was watching the
remaster.
For real, right?
Except for the fact that they were supposed to have been around the planet that they were going to drop Lester off of, and it's a giant continuity error, but that's not important right now. It's really pretty.
Well, it's
never mind
details.
That.
Come on.
Yes. Whatever.
Whatever. Jeez. Oh, yeah. You're such a geek, Blandrew. Gosh, wow. Worried about details. I bet you wrote a letter to the studio, didn't you?
Maybe. I tweeted angrily at Mike Okuda.
Yeah. But yes, thank God that TOS got 6 films. Because if this had been the end of Star Trek, that would be like the weakest weak sauce. I mean, I hate the Enterprise finale, and the Voyager finale is kind of bad. And DS9, I don't entirely agree with the way they went with Sisko at the end. But this is the worst. Like, this is one of the worst episodes of TOS. And it's like, they're not even approaching it as the finale. It's just, this is another episode, and this is a bad episode.
Like, and 20 really years later, they're like, let's keep going. Like, right. Really? Really?
Like, didn't you see Turnabout Intruder? Like, you really want to go on from Turnabout Intruder? Like, thank God Nicholas Meyer didn't love Turnabout Intruder and made Wrath of Khan a Turnabout Intruder sequel.
God.
Janice Lester is back.
Yeah. The Wrath of Lester.
Janice!
I think this is a great last episode of Ready Room. You know, this is a great finale, you guys. We're done.
We'll be back in 20 years for a Ready Room movie.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know if you can see, but I do have the hieroglyphics up there on the wall, so I'm going to be switching with one of
so we're
on.
Ready.
Let's go to switch.
Just be careful when you visit Jenny's house. Be careful. If she asks you to stand in front of that wall, she may have something up her sleeve. I'm glad that when the motion picture rolled around, they didn't decide to just pick up from the series. And the first time we see Admiral Kirk, he's walking like he's Janice Lester.
Oh, God.
He walks in with the clipboard.
Oh, my God. With that, what is it, a cork I'm stuck up his butt still?
Right.
I'm really stiff.
William Shatner's like, I am sure that this is what women look like when they walk.
Yeah. I am a proper lady.
What doesn't make any sense why he would walk different? He's still physically the same person.
Yes.
Right.
The penis.
Well, yeah. So maybe that's why she's walking funny. She's not used to having something dangling around down there.
Trying to balance the weight there. It takes some practice.
It's difficult. It's adjustment.
So, Jenny Zell, final thoughts on Turnabout Intruder.
I thought this was a horrible, horrible ending to the series, honestly. And it was, it would have been okay if it was somewhere in the middle of the series, you know. But yeah. It was just poorly executed all the way around. It was badly written. The acting was horrible. And you know, I don't know. But it's original series, and I like it. So, you know. That's about it. Sorry.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a really, really bad way to end it. It's not like, you know, Firefly kind of ended on a really great episode that could have been a finale, even though they didn't design it as a finale. TOS, it's like, guys, you rolled really poorly. Like, yeah, like this is not the episode to end it on. It's disappointing.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was still fun to watch and, you know, the kind of campy, you know, series 3 sort of way, but
right,
and it was just bad, and I'm like, where's Uhura? You know, she just disappeared. And
right.
Yeah,
it's fun to watch in that Spock's brain kind of way. Although I think Spock's brain is a better episode than Turnabout Intruder.
Yeah,
that's sad.
Agreed.
I feel like if this episode had been in the middle of the third season, it would be easier for you to say, oh,
exactly.
Yeah, that's that crazy one where Shatner acts like a woman and Sulu and Chekhov can't figure
exactly.
out that their captain wouldn't order their immediate execution.
Yeah.
But because it's the very last episode, you feel like,
there was no closure at the end of the series.
Yeah.
There's not. I mean, the last time that I lacked this much closure, you know, some people might think, well, it was the Lost finale, but no, it wasn't. It was actually, it was the end of the fourth season of ALF, where they...
I thought you were going to say your honeymoon.
No, he's serious. He's serious.
They knew they were going to be canceled. And the writers decided that they were going to try to strong-arm NBC into giving ALF a fifth season. So they wrote the finale to the fourth season as a cliffhanger where ALF was going to go home and the spaceship was going to come. And it's to be... He goes out, Willie takes him out into this clearing. And I know it's really, really sad that I know this much about ALF, but you know, come on.
No, it's awesome.
Willie takes him out into this clearing in the woods to take him to the spaceship. And ALF's deciding if he's going to get on the spaceship or not. And it's to be continued. And there's no fifth season. Because the studio said, you know, that's really cool what you did there. But no, we're not going to bring you back.
Wow.
So you never knew. Well, what happened? And then like 20 years later, they made an ALF movie that has nothing to do with the finale. ALF's back on Earth.
Yeah,
he's in a
terrible cage
in a lab at a military base.
Yeah.
We don't talk about the movie.
So, yeah.
Now, there was one little scene that we didn't discuss that I really liked, and I think that, you know, I want to share my appreciation of this scene when Kirk has just got his physical examination done, and he's standing there without his shirt on, and McCoy says, "Wait, don't get dressed yet." And I'm waiting for the music to play. Just, you know, come over here. I need to continue your examination.
There's a lot of slash fic that could have been generated from this episode. That's for sure.
I bet.
Well, it's been a great discussion. We've passed an hour, so let's wrap up. So before we go, as we always do, let's start with you, Jenny. Tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
Oh, I'm a little bit everywhere, I think. I'm like kind of a podcasting mogul at this point. I'm on Dork Trek, the Star Trek Next Generation podcast at dorktrek.com. I'm on Playing Doctor, which is a Doctor Who podcast at playingdoctorpodcast.com. And also on my new show, Broadcast, which can be found at mouthybroadcast.com.
Excellent. All right. And Drew, tell everyone where they can find you.
They can find me on Twitter at 005, all spelled out. And they can find me on Trek FM, where I'm almost done. I mean, I know I skipped ahead to the last episode here, but I'm almost done watching the entire series of TOS. And I'm going to start going back through and writing reviews and getting a lot of stuff up on the site. And it'll be fun.
I can't wait for your Turnabout Intruder review. All right. And Char, how about you?
Well, you can find me at Twitter at the profanity, which I think with this episode it pretty much explains itself. I've been naughty.
So Chris, episode 69 went pretty much as I expected. I'm down about 3.5 beers, which leaves me some left for next time I'm on the show, which I should say up front, I'm really not sure when I'm going to be on the show next, because as you may have noticed, I've got a countdown going, which is actually not to Star Trek London, but actually to a secret trip I'm taking overseas. So I may or may not be on the Ready Room next week. I guess we'll just have to see how things go.
We will find out. So yes, everyone, Greg may be missing for the next show or two as he goes on his mission. and he has his refrigeration suit ready, is all I can say.
May or may not be a mapping mission, I'm not saying.
Oh, so he may or may not be with us on the next two shows. When Greg is not here, though, Char will be with me. So the Ready Room will continue on. We'll have our usual fun talking Trek, and then Greg will of course be back when the mission is complete. All right, Greg, well, let's just get everyone out of here at this point. I think Turnabout Intruder went very well. It went better than I expected. I really didn't know what we were going to talk about from a serious standpoint, mm-hmm. but it's definitely a fun episode to talk about. So anyone who feels like they want to share their thoughts on Turnabout Intruder with us, you can go to trek.fm/contact. You can use the form there. You can send us a message. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, on Google Plus at hyperchannel/trekfmg+. You can find us on app.net or ADN under username trekfm, and on Twitter, where Greg, Char, Drew, and myself all tweet from the account at the same time, sometimes literally, and that's at username trekfm. And Greg, everyone can find you on Twitter as well.
That's right. I am there at Greg Harbin, and definitely follow me this week because I'll be posting, hopefully, some quite interesting stuff starting this coming weekend. So stay tuned.
And you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. Of course, I tweet about Star Trek. I tweet about some everyday things, but they have a Star Trek twist. So if you want to find out how crazy my mind is, you can follow me there. Also, music, college football, Japan, design, all kinds of crazy things. And I might even do a barrel roll or two. Which is very interesting on Twitter. So I know we were going to talk about mailbag and iTunes reviews. We're going to do that next time. So I would like to invite everyone to come by the website at trek.fm for articles, all of our other shows, Hyperchannel with Tristan, Trek News and Views with Colin, Deck 8 with Colin and Tom. We've got so many things going on, Matterstream with me, games, polls, everything at trek.fm. All right, Greg, I'm going to wander off. You know, I've got Turnabout Intruder queued back up again. I'm trying to practice my posture when I walk, you know, because I'm hoping to be on America's Next Top Model.
All right, Chris, I think it's time to stick a corn cob in it, because the Ready Room is done. May or may not be a mapping mission, I'm not saying. Okay. I'm sorry, Chris, we can get the outro done. You said I'm going on a mission. Okay. What do you want me to do?